From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, January 11th, 2017. And on this day, Maine lawmakers say they want to give the state more time to implement rules regulating the sale of recreational marijuana. Those who spearheaded the recreational marijuana referendum don't like the idea. The Penobscot Indian Nation has obtained federal permits to process, bottle, and ship its own line of vodka. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Maine could soon join Massachusetts by extending the time required to implement a voter-approved law that legalizes the retail sale and licensing of recreational marijuana. Legislative leaders have unveiled a proposal that pushes back the start date for licensed pot shops until February of next year. As Steve Missler reports, supporters of legalization are unhappy with the bill, saying that it further delays the regulation and taxation of a product currently sold on the black market.
Maine voters narrowly approved Question 1 in November, and the law is supposed to take effect at the end of the month. When it does, adults age 21 and older will be able to possess, grow, and use marijuana. Retail licensing and sales were not supposed to begin for at least 9 months. That's because the law gives state officials time to develop rules around licensing and testing and regulations that cover everything to tracking the crop, to packaging it for sale in retail shops. But legislative leaders on both sides of the aisle want to give the state 3 additional months to come up with retail regulations. House Speaker Sarah Gideon is a Democrat from Freeport.
We want to make sure we get it right. We're talking about public safety, and we take that incredibly seriously.
But supporters of legalization say the proposal doesn't take the will of voters seriously. David Boyer, who helped lead the campaign for Question 1 last year, says politicians in Augusta should have given the built-in 9-month delay a chance.
To do it before we've even started, it's just, you know, it stinks. It's lame, and it doesn't make sense.
The moratorium proposal does not affect the ability of adults 21 and older to possess up to 2.5 ounces of marijuana, grow up to 6 mature plants, 12 immature plants, and unlimited seedlings. That will still become legal by the end of the month. But Boyer argues that the bill supported by Gideon and Republican Senate President Mike Thibodeau will create a gray area in which possession is legal, but buying and selling is not. And Boyer says that means the black market for marijuana will continue to flourish.
This year or two means that adults will have to continue to go to the black market to purchase marijuana. And that's what we're trying to stop. That's what we're trying to minimize.
According to federal health data, nearly 20% of Mainers age 12 and older have used marijuana in the past year. That's the 6th highest rate in the country. And an analysis by New Frontier, a D.C.-based company tracking the markets for legal pot, pegged Maine's illicit use as the 11th highest in the country. It's one of the reasons the state was targeted for legalization, with outside groups spending over $2 million last year to pass the referendum. While many legislators see legalization as a big opportunity to increase state revenues, some, including Senate President Mike Thibodeau, are wary of rushing in. In fact, Thibodeau says he wanted a far-reaching moratorium, delaying both personal use and possession. That would have likely run into stiff opposition in a legislature divided between a Republican-controlled Senate and Democrat-controlled House. So he and Gideon settled on a new proposal, as well as the creation of a commission to oversee the development of marijuana regulations.
This is simply an opportunity to set some reasonable public policy around an important issue.
Those policies go beyond the regulatory framework for retail marijuana and encompass issues such as how to test for impaired driving. Also, lawmakers have submitted dozens of other marijuana bills this session, which means that the law approved by voters this past fall could look very different by the time it's finally implemented. The proposal to give the legislature more time to work on retail regulations is an emergency measure, and that means it needs a 2/3 vote from the House and Senate. Thibodeau expects the bill to pass overwhelmingly, but supporters of legalization hope they can cobble together a coalition of libertarians and Democrats to put the brakes on the moratorium. The effort by both sides begins next week, when the bill is expected to have a public hearing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The Penobscot Indian Nation has obtained federal permits to process, bottle, and ship its own line of vodka that it plans to market to tribal casinos nationwide. But some regulators have yet to approve the plan, which is being eyed skeptically by some members of the tribe. And one former chief says the Penobscot's ruling council could be violating tribal law if it attempts to build a distillery on Indian Island. A.J. Higgins has more.
Little is known about the specifics of the vodka distillery initiative. Penobscot Chief Kirk Francis did confirm to the Bango Daily News that the tribe has sought federal and state permits to operate a distillery at 31 Wabanaki Way on Indian Island. But he refused to comment further on an enterprise that he said didn't even exist. Some tribal members are calling for more details.
Enough information has been released where everybody is talking about it. So I think it would be really good for tribal administration, tribal government to, you know, be upfront and be more open about what they are doing. It would just ease, I think, a lot of the potential rumors.
Barry Dana is a former Penobscot chief who lost the election to Francis 2 years ago. He says he'd like answers to a number of questions before the tribal council gives the final go-ahead for a subsidiary of the tribe's parent company, Penobscot Indian Nation Enterprises, to move forward. He'd like to know who the major investors are, what the financial exposure to the tribe would be should the enterprise fail, and how many trucks per day would be negotiating the island's narrow streets. There are also concerns among tribal members who want assurances that the tribal casinos will actually purchase the Penobscot Nation's vodka and some sense of what kind of financial return the tribe can expect.
It would be good to get the information.
Pine Distilling, which is headed by Chief Kirk Francis's father, would oversee the bottling and rectifying process to create a brand of vodka called Bagui. That's a word in the Algonquin language that Dana says means pure or clean. And because the tribe's state permit application has the distillery operation located on the island, Dana says the council will have to take some kind of action to allow it by exempting it from tribal law that bans alcohol from the island reservation.
If the tribe, as a general membership, decides they want to go with vodka and sell it to the casinos across the country, just have the plant not on the reservation. That would be a simple fix to this, and I think a lot of people would feel better about it.
Dana says that he would prefer that the tribe's business ventures did not include addictive substances, and it's a position that tribal member Lisa Montgomery says she's heard from other Penobscots. Montgomery has been circulating petitions to bring the issue back before the tribe in the form of a general meeting to discuss banning alcohol production on the island.
To be able to bring this to a discussion where we could influence any policy of businesses happening on the reservation, we do have to address it from the tribal side with laws and ordinances that would occur there.
Montgomery says she has almost enough signatures to bring the issue to a general meeting, which could be scheduled next month. Calls to Chief Francis and other tribal leaders were not returned. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
The past 3 years have seen a rapid rise in demand for one type of meat. This is true across the nation, and that meat is pork. 2015 saw a record 9.8 billion pounds sold to restaurants. With bacon on everything from scallops to cupcakes, demand for pork is just as high in Maine. But are Maine farmers reaping any benefit? Jennifer Mitchell has this look at the state's other white meat.
It's 8 below 0 at the Kenny Farm in Patton. The clock has just struck 6 a.m. and the chores are already underway.
So typical kind of day for you.
Yeah, every day, 7 days a week, 365 days. We sell feed to pigs all the way from the coast all the way to Fort Kent.
Charlie Kenny and his wife Laura are one link in a burgeoning nationwide pork industry. They're not a big operation. They breed and raise up to 200 Yorkshire piglets at a time, and then these feeder pigs are shipped to other farms around New England to finish growing. Eventually, they'll hit freezer cases as bacon, sausage, and pork chops.
A feeder pig in the spring, they get anywhere from $110 to $130 for a 40-pound pig.
That same 40-pound pig will top out at over 200 pounds, with consumers paying up to $12 per pound for organically raised cuts. But the Kennys, who've been involved in farming their whole lives, are the first to admit that the demands of pig farming are not for everybody. A pig barn in winter is not only the smelliest place you're ever likely to be, but also one of the loudest.
We grind our own grain. It's barley and oats and soybean and vitamins added.
I mean, is that more expensive or less expensive?
It's less expensive, but more work. But then you know what they're eating, too. We're not buying commercial grain.
And that grain is grown just up the road in Aroostook County. It's this attention to the pig's diet and treatment that many customers are really seeking when they buy pork at a local farmer's market or farm stand, says Clark Souther, who heads the Maine Pork Producers Association.
A lot of them like to know where their meat comes from. And it's raised differently today than it was when I was a kid.
Souther says once upon a time, pigs were treated more as garbage disposal units. Concerns over factory farming, health, and animal welfare put the industry into a negative spotlight in the 90s. But these days, he says many Maine consumers are more educated and choosy. They're seeking products they can feel good about eating if they know where to find them.
This year, I had to turn some of these customers away, and then I was short on roaster pigs. Some of the other producers I sent them to, they were sold out.
Souther says his members are reporting that customers are ordering pork at least a year in advance, with orders over the last couple of years doubled or tripled in some instances, and they're going straight to the farm for the product. Still, success in Maine pork has been spotty. One of the state's larger producers, Mike Hemond of Minot, who sells as many as 2,000 piglets each year, says he's frustrated with the industry because a big piece of the marketing puzzle is missing: retailers.
Right now, I mean, these grocers are just looking to find the cheapest product they can and get the most for it.
Hemond says he's been offered contracts with local processors at 59 cents per pound when it costs him 75 cents per pound to break even. And he says that will have to change if Maine is truly to become a pork-producing state.
If there could be, you know, something, tax credits or something that locally and even at the federal level that the grocers could get by, you know, rewarding them for buying local.
Back at the Kenny Farm in Patton, Laura and Charlie agree that at this time it would be tough for a farmer in Maine to try and compete in a pork commodities market, but they say their own son is living proof that the demand is there.
Well, he got 20 last year, piglets, and raises them and sells them, and it sells them at his own farm store and at a farmer's market now, and he gets $4 and $5 a pound, $7 a pound for sausage and bacon.
And they say their neighbor put his kids through college from the proceeds from just 10 pigs per year. But they've also seen couples last a season and quit. It's not known how many farmers are entering or leaving the industry. The state doesn't track that data, nor does there seem to be a concerted effort at this time to organize or market Maine pork. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, January 11th. Thanks to Susan Sharon, Keith Shortall, and our digital team. I'm Ed Morin.